It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Let's get right to the Trump trial. Story number one. Though I would urge you to stay tuned for a great kicker at the end of this podcast. So first there was a hearing on the gag order. And let's just say that Judge Juan Marchan eviscerated Trump's lawyer over this. Raised his voice at one point. I'll read you some of the quotes. So first came an assistant DA, Christopher Conroy, who said, look, remember, this is the question of whether Trump violated it. No doubt the defendant made these statements. Throwing a MAGA into a post doesn't make it political. It may make it more ominous. He knows what he is not allowed to do and does it anyway. He says whatever he needs to say to get the results he wants. Trump was asked about reposting files and said that flies in the face of common sense. He's launching attack on two separate witnesses. And look, factually, this is true. There's just no question that he seemed to be openly defying the gag order. More quotes from Conroy. Intentionally breaching the line set by this court. Doing everything he can to undermine the process. But what's being asked for here, since it's being alleged that Trump violated this 10 different times, is a $1,000 fine for each of the 10 violations. Now, I'm sorry, but $10,000 to Donald Trump, not exactly going to require him, selling off any of his buildings. Conroy saying, we're not seeking incarceration. Trump seems to be angling for that. Then the defense, Trump's lawyer, Todd Blanche. Absolutely no willful violation of the gag order. He was asked about posts on Michael Cohen and even Michael Avenatti, who gave a jailhouse interview to MSNBC. And the judge kept saying, well, refer directly to posts by Michael Cohen and Stormy Daniels. And Bland said, look, Trump is allowed to respond to political attacks. And Cohen and Stormy have ramped up their attacks. Denied using pardon as a justification. I don't know the specifics on that. Okay, again, the judge asked for specifics. Well, Mr. Trump truths, meaning posts on True Social all day, virtually 7 days a week. Now, here's where the judge really got frustrated. I keep asking you over and over to give me an answer, and I'm not getting an answer. Blanche says, look, Stormy Daniels is on X. She's talking to the press. Trump asks why the DA didn't prosecute Cohen for lying. Response, well, Trump strongly believes that. That's just silly, the judge said, waiving the gag order because of attacks. Reposts aren't passive. And the explanation was that there's a group of folks that helped Trump find articles, such as in the New York Post or from news programs. And Marchand pointed to one and said, this was said on TV and your client had to type it out. Doesn't mean your client can wash his hands of it just by claiming it's a repost. And then he said, you're losing all credibility with the court. You've presented nothing. And he reserved his decision. So television didn't seem that interested in this. How do I know this? CNN, MSNBC took several breaks. They did not do that during the opening statements. They did not do that during the beginning of David Pecker's testimony. And they knew. Look, they have to make some money. They can't have this all be presented as a public service. But they just was sort of like, let's get on to the main event. I don't think there's much doubt as to how Judge Marchand is going to rule, given the harsh dressing down that he gave to Donald Trump's lawyer. Next up, David Pecker, the former National Enquirer publisher and longtime Trump pal, testified, resumed his testimony, and confirmed everything you've heard about how he was basically in the tank for Donald Trump. In fact, Michael Cohen, the former Trump fixer, invited him to the kickoff of the campaign, June 2015. 2 months later, he had a meeting with Trump and Cohen, was asked, what can I do, what my magazines could do to help the campaign? I would run or publish positive stories about Mr. Trump and negative stories about his opponents. If I hear anything negative, I'd notify Michael Cohen. He said that this was a mutual benefit. It was never written down. Of course, these people aren't dumb. He told Inquirer editor Dylan Howard had to be confidential. So the Inquirer would run stories, like headlines like Donald Trump, healthiest individual ever elected. Cohen played a role in negative stories the Inquirer ran about Trump's campaign opponents. Cohen would call. We'd like you to run a negative article on, let's say, Ted Cruz. He'd send the information, said Pecker, and we would embellish it from there. And it would be bungling surgeon Ben Carson left sponge in patient's brain. Ted Cruz shamed by porn star. That's kind of ironic. Ted Cruz sex scandal, five secret mistresses, all were discussed with Cohen. I'm not saying that any of this is true. The assistant DA went to great lengths to show how close friends they were. They've known each other since the 80s. My favorite, in 1989, David Pecker presented Donald Trump with the idea for a new magazine, Trump Style. He liked it. Apparently, it never got off the ground. Trump was very helpful, introducing me to other executives, inviting him to parties. They discussed the apprentice. Trump would tip him off on who'd be eliminated, Pecker's word, on the next show. He'd publish the ratings, which he got from Trump. He would sometimes get messages to the former president through Trump's bodyguard. Now, in 2007, Trump introduced Pecker to Cohen as his new hire. My contact should go through Michael Cohen. So he hasn't yet gotten to some of what happened later on when their friendship took a bad turn. Remember, Pecker testifying under a grant of immunity. So he's got to tell the truth. He's trying to do it in a kind of a friendly, non-adversarial way, but the words speak for themselves. First, Trump saying yesterday on Truth Social, why are Palestinian protesters and even rioters allowed to roam the city, scream, shout, sit, block traffic, enter buildings, not get permits, basically do whatever they want, including threatening Supreme Court justices right in front of their homes? That was much earlier. And yet, people who truly love our country and want to make America great again are not allowed to peacefully protest and are rudely and systematically shut down and ushered off to faraway holding areas. The holding areas are not that far away from the courthouse. And the truth is, not that many protesters have shown up. Doesn't mean there's not a lot of Donald Trump supporters out there, but it does mean that maybe they don't want to get into a melee and get arrested. And in another posting, he said, this is a Biden witch hunt to keep me off the campaign trail. So far, it's not working because my poll numbers are higher than ever. Now, a little bit more on the defense opening statement. I caught some of it yesterday. I mean, I watched the whole thing, but I was able to get some of it on the podcast. Washington Post, the unusual and challenging part of this case is that to convict Trump of a felony, prosecutors need to tie the alleged doctoring of financial records to the more lurid election-related conspiracy for which he is not facing charges. A Trump attorney Todd Bland saying the case is hobbled by a complete lack of knowledge or intent by President Trump. And he really went after Michael Cohen's credibility. Obviously, he's a disbarred lawyer who has served time in prison, and that would be a move that a first-year law student would make. Even the Manhattan DA's office tried to inoculate Cohen a little bit by saying, yes, it is true, he's had problems in the past, but he has no reason not to tell the truth now. And saying that basically Cohen, like, this is his livelihood. You know, he gets to go on TV and write books because he is the former fixer, the former Trump lawyer who was turned on him and was intimately involved in the negotiations and dealings with David Pecker and his company that included the National Enquirer. Now, the question about whether Trump decides to testify also came up yesterday. Judge Juan Merchan saying that if he does, and I'm not sure his lawyers will let him, but Trump could always overrule them, they will be allowed to ask him about the defamation and sexual assault trial involving E. Jean Carroll and the civil case by New York AG Tish James, in which Trump was found liable for huge sums of money. Okay, you know, now New York Times and the Washington Post both have like 5 takeaways from the trial. This has become a thing. But if you're going to do 5 and the Washington Post does 5, then why not the Times can do 6 and say we have even more takeaways? Okay, the prosecution has a big story to tell. Jurors will be told, likely be told, about events inside fancy hotel rooms, Trump Tower, the Oval Office, and the stakes are the presidency. Also, the defense wants to destroy prosecution witnesses, as in every trial. Todd Blanche said that, you know, Trump's a human being. He's a father. He's defending himself at trial just as any of us would do. He said the NDA, non-disclosure agreement, that Stormy Daniels signed is very typical among the wealthy and famous and nothing illegal. He also said there's nothing wrong with trying to influence election. It's called democracy. And he called Michael Cohen a criminal who can't be trusted. Also a little squib here on David Pecker. Oh, this is interesting. He talked about checkbook journalism, which the Inquirer and other supermarket tabloids are famous for practicing. Anything more than $10,000, Pecker had to personally improve. The only thing that was important is the cover of a magazine, Pecker testified. Now let me just touch on the extreme weirdness of watching TV and all you can get are sketches and reporters doing stand-ups, or sometimes the anchors, because this is a bigger week. The anchors are now people like CNN's Anderson Cooper, you know, sitting outside in the cold near the courthouse. And as the Times points out, cable network anchors and correspondents often sounded like they were on the radio taking an occasional stab with some play-by-play, except that's a flawed analogy because on radio, at least you can hear the play-by-play. So CNN, for example, would put up in the screen on the left-hand side the latest comment by Pecker, the latest about the opening arguments, and 2 seconds later, you'd hear Anderson Cooper reading that verbatim. He's getting it in his ear. It's the only way they can do it. I'm not being critical of that, but it is just so strange that we have to rely on this media filter. And it also just, if there was cameras in this courtroom, the ratings, which are already going to be high, at least by cable news standards, would be 4 times as high, 5 times as high, maybe 10 times as high. But that is not permitted in New York State Court. Related Trump matter, when I interviewed the former president, we talked about his flip on TikTok. When he was president, he tried to ban TikTok in the United States or get the Chinese-owned company to divest. But now, he says in a radio interview, just so everyone knows, especially the young people, no, I'm sorry, this is on Truth Social, crooked Joe Biden is responsible for banning TikTok. just so everyone knows. He is the one pushing it to close and doing it to help his friends at Facebook become richer and more dominant and able to continue to fight, perhaps illegally, the Republican Party. It's called election interference. Well, it's Congress that is about to pass this. And in this environment, Biden's not going to refuse to sign it. But this theory that the reason Trump has changed his position is because it helps Facebook, I don't know, seems a little thin to me. And one more story on Trump, and this is an important one having to do with the classified documents trial, which I think would have been better for everybody because of the importance of it. And also, it doesn't take 6 months to try the case. If this had gone first, and this obviously partisan and relatively unimportant bunch of charges brought by Alvin Bragg was down the line. But that's not happening. New document released in late November 2021 as the National Archives was trying to get Donald Trump to return the records he took from the White House. One of Mr. Trump's associates advised him to give the materials back. Now, they don't name this person. I have a strong idea who I think it might be based on the tone, but I'm not going to speculate since I don't know for sure. And the name was not released. He's described here as Person 16. Here's the quote. "When you whatever you have, give everything back. Let them come here and get everything. Don't give them a noble reason to indict you because they will." Yes, that sounds prescient. Less than 2 years later, Trump was charged with violating the Espionage Act, holding on to more than 30 highly classified documents, obstructing the government's attempts to retrieve them. Okay, more from Person 16. He went into the private club and residence. Trump was dressed in golfing attire. Trump reacted to his warnings, says this associate, with a weird, "you're the man" type of response, left the impression he would, in fact, return the materials to the archives. The conversation was interrupted when a Mar-a-Lago club member and a much younger woman walked up and asked to have a photo taken with Trump. Person 16 said that some of Trump's children had been enlisted in the task of persuading him to return the presidential records. One of the children was told, "There are issues with the boxes. They belong to the government. Talk to your dad about giving them back. It's not worth the aggravation." This person asked their agents not to record their conversation. Obviously, they can describe from their note-taking or transcript. Because he said, excuse me, he or she said, it would be a risk for him. I'm sorry, it is a dude in the Trump world. One of the other lawyers, according to this interview, was brought on board after being seen by Trump on television. Another member of the team was hired by Trump because of how they dressed and by placing themselves directly into Trump's line of sight. And this is important. Person 16 said Trump may have told, I don't know, that doesn't sound very solid though, his personal aide, Walt Nauta, who was charged also as a defendant in this case, would receive a pardon if Trump was elected again. Nauta was also told that even if he gets charged with lying to the FBI, F. POTUS, former president, will pardon him in 2024, actually 2025.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.
Number three, Marjorie Taylor Greene continued to pound House Speaker Mike Johnson after the House over the weekend passed the foreign aid package that she and other MAGA Republicans opposed, although I will add that 101 Republicans, a bit less than half, voted for it. She was on with Steve Bannon on his War Room podcast. They went after the bill. They went after the media celebrating the bill, which may well pass the Senate today and then signed by Biden. She said MAGA was done with the Republican Party and might not even want to vote in November. They're angry on a whole nother level, and that's what worries me. They're absolutely done with the Republican leadership like Mike Johnson, who totally sold us out to the Democrats, joined the Uniparty faster than anyone. Voters are so angry this time. I'm really worried they're not going to give us the majority back in 2025. But she still hasn't formally introduced the motion to vacate against Speaker Johnson. I kind of got the impression from my interview with Kevin McCarthy on Media Buzz Sunday, who I'm sure is in regular touch with Marjorie Taylor Greene. She was and is one of his biggest allies. He said some words to the effect of that this might not happen. And if that's the case, you know, MTG is going to continue to pound Johnson, but there may not be a vote, at least this year, to have to pick a new speaker. There seems to be a consensus that Johnson will not win a leadership election next January, whether it's for speaker or minority leader. Now, The Atlantic has a piece. The headline is, what if Mike Johnson is actually good at this? And I give him, even though he lit the fire, he held up single-handedly the aid to Ukraine and Israel, for which there was, we now know, strong bipartisan support in the House. The Atlantic begins by saying, you know, this seemed completely improbable. His whole tenure seemed improbable back in March. He was pleased with these last few days. The Atlantic got an interview with the speaker. What I try to do, my leadership style, he said, is that I bring in the Freedom Caucus, I bring in the Main Street or Problem Solvers Caucus guys, people from across the conference with disparate views. I put them around a conference table in the speaker's office and we just hash it out, let them debate and talk. I mean, that's the beauty of it. It's part of the process. Well, but clearly, it doesn't always work. And so, for example, you know, they were going to do the compromise with the border wall. Not just the border wall, but greatly beefing up security at the southern border. Donald Trump came out against it, and it was dead. By the way, MTG went on X and castigated Johnson as a traitor. It's a really strong word to his conference and country. And Steve Bannon called him a sanctimonious twerp. Oh, so by last December, Mike Johnson was venting over text to Woody Jenkins, a guy named Woody Jenkins. All the leftist media is trying to gut me like a fish. So, you know, politicians always say, oh, I don't care what the press says. I do what I think is right. Yeah, well, all of the leftist media, interesting. He also described the speakership in other texts to other people like this. I feel like a triage nurse on the battlefield. They wheel a bloody body in and yell, stop the bleeding. And I will, and then turn around, and there's another bloody body. But it's the Democrats who seem willing to give Mike Johnson a measure of grace. As you know, they bailed him out, or the aid to Ukraine / Israel / Taiwan would not have passed. Hakeem Jeffries has said positive things about him. Even Nancy Pelosi says, I'd like to dislike him, but it's hard. She knows what that job takes. So people wonder about Johnson, whose dog is named Justice, whose favorite song is the hymn, Be Thou My Vision, and who in casual conversations brings up Reagan, Washington, John Adams, no booze, no foul language. One Trump advisor telling Atlantic, it's like he's really not like this. No one can be like this. Yet it was also personal for Johnson, whose son is headed to the U.S. Naval Academy this fall. This is a live fire exercise for me, as it is for so many American families. He'd rather send bullets than American boys to Ukraine. We have to do the right thing, and history will judge us. And he also told the Atlantic five times, I don't regret it. I don't, meaning taking on the speakership and everything that followed. Story number four, the pro-Palestinian protests. I'm using air quotes because they're really pro-Gaza protests, are spreading. And from one college campus to another. I have a column on this today that I highly recommend. I spent a lot of time thinking about this, mostly about the situation in Columbia. I'll come back to that. Well, let's start with Columbia, actually, because the New York Times has a piece saying the university senate is expected to vote maybe today, or tomorrow, rather, on a resolution censuring Columbia President Manoush Shafiq, a reaction to her testimony before Congress and the arrests of more than 100 student protesters. Now, when I first read the first part of the lead or the headline, I thought, well, they're going to attack her for letting things get out of control. But no, they say she's gone too far. They don't like the arrests. A draft of the resolution accused Shafiq of violating the fundamental requirements of academic freedom, an unprecedented assault on student rights. How dare she call in the NYPD to do all these arrests. Also calls for the censure of two chairs of Columbia Board of Trustees. Here's the official comment. President Shafiq is focused on de-escalating the rancor on Columbia's campus. I'll just add that the campus basically shut down yesterday. Only remote learning. And this is, you know, I think the protesters came back after those arrests and they set up tents again. And Shafiq did nothing. So I was really glad of what she did last week. And now she seems paralyzed. This censure vote would be symbolic. The Senate doesn't have the power to do anything. Meanwhile, at NYU yesterday, the NYPD was called in, made arrests after school administrators asked for their assistance. NYU faculty were also among those arrested. Videos on social media show dozens of officers in tense confrontations with protesters. Some officers tossed tents, so they're setting up tent cities too. Others grappled with demonstrators. Video showed police loading people whose hands were zip-tied behind their backs onto correctional buses. They were told they were being arrested for disorderly conduct, according to NYU's independent student paper. The police had set up barriers to keep protesters in a certain area. Barriers were breached yesterday afternoon by protesters, many of whom we believe are not affiliated with NYU, the school said, engaged in disorderly, disruptive, and antagonizing behavior. No wonder many Jewish students want to stay home at NYU and Columbia. Also, at Yale yesterday, 47 students were arrested and will be referred for disciplinary action, potentially including suspension. The school said it made repeated efforts to talk to the protesters, then offered meetings with trustees, and warned of arrests before the Monday morning action. Police later released the detained protesters. Here's Yale President Peter Solovyu. We became aware of police reports identifying harmful acts and threatening language used against individuals at or near protest sites. Some of the aggressors are believed to be members of the Yale community, while others were outsiders. We will not tolerate such behavior, nor open any violation of Yale policies that interrupts academic and campus operations. Yes, that's exactly the stance that universities need to take. So in this column, I talk about being well familiar with Columbia because I got my master's in journalism there. And the anti-Jewish hatred, you know, heading into the first night of Passover last night, just unbelievable. Only remote classes. And that says to me that the school doesn't think it can control what goes on campus. But that's why you have a police department. Now, look, I'm all for free speech. And I think people should have the right to peacefully protest. Clearly, that is not happening at Columbia and NYU and Yale and other schools. And I think this will continue to spread. We have harassment and cursing of Jewish students. Some sprayed with water at Columbia. No wonder the head of the rabbi who heads the Orthodox Union's Learning Center at Columbia sent a message to about 300 students saying, you should stay home until the reality in and around campus has dramatically improved. It's not our job as Jews to ensure our safety on campus. One of those arrested, as I've mentioned, at Columbia, the daughter of Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, who praised her. You know, she's a member of the anti-Israel group Apartheid Divest. It costs about $90,000 to go to Barnard, which is the sister school of Columbia. Shafiq, she's trying to balance the rights of students to express political views while protecting other students from rhetoric that amounts to harassment and discrimination. It's not just rhetoric. Jewish students who were there talked about protesters shouting, "All you do is colonize. Go back to Europe. Go back to Poland." And I've mentioned this student who went on Martha McCallum's show, identified only as Katie. It's sickening. It's truly heartbreaking to think that I go to school with people who have these horrible anti-Israel, anti-Jewish, and anti-American beliefs. It's really quite disturbing to think that these people are allowed to be around me and my classmates, and to see my friends, people I recognize on these videos, being screamed at, that these people condone their rape and murder. It's just so beyond disturbing. And National Review comes out and says, provides more detail. As late as last month, Columbia invited speakers who praised the October 7th attacks and even hijacking airplanes as important tactics in the Palestinian resistance. You now have Senator John Fetterman and a couple of other Democrats calling for Shafiq to resign. And according to New York Post, a former National Review intern, Sahar Tartak, was stabbed in the eye with a Palestinian flag, was shopping for an eye patch. I mean, this is outrageous, unbelievable, just unbelievable. Now, I just think, and listen to this, an intruder arrested after breaking into LA Mayor Karen Bass's official residence. She was home. Fortunately, her family were not injured. The LAPD responded right away. Officials say the intruder broke in through a glass door. This person, this suspect, is either monumentally stupid or intentionally. I mean, everybody, I'm sure, knows the official resident of the mayor of Los Angeles. Intentionally did this. Story five, let me go through a couple things. There was quite a New York Times scoop yesterday. 23 top Chinese swimmers, yesterday or the day before, tested positive for the same powerful banned substance 7 months before the Tokyo Olympic Games in 2021. But were allowed to escape public scrutiny and compete after top Chinese officials secretly cleared them of doping. And the global authority that oversees the games didn't intervene. Many still compete for China. Nearly half the swimming team that China sent tested positive. China acknowledged the positive tests in a report by its anti-doping regulator, but said they had ingested the banned substance unwittingly. Yeah, I'm sure it's quite unwitting. And this is a failure of China, the World Anti-Doping Agency, and other national testing programs. All right, a couple of things. Aaron Boone, the Yankees manager, was tossed out of a game the other day, and he got such a raw deal, I cannot even believe it. He didn't say a word. There was video showing that he was just standing on the steps and looking the other way. A fan behind him started shouting at the umpire. The umpire came over and said, Boone, you're out. Boone said, I didn't say a word. It was some guy in the stands. He says, I don't care who said it. You're out. And later, after video showed that Boone was telling the truth, the umpire was unapologetic. Well, you know, I heard this and I had to do it. I think he should be kicked out of the league or suspended or something. And he owns Aaron Boone and the Yankees an apology. Taylor Swift continuing to get negative reviews from both fans and reviewers. And one thing that's upset people is she drops a couple of F-bombs on this new album. And, you know, given what's out there today, that by itself, it's not shocking to point, but Taylor Swift has a lot of young female fans, girls, who hear this. Now, maybe they drop F-bombs too, I don't know, but it has still upset some people. And finally, the kicker. Sydney Sweeney, a very popular young actress who has become, you know, a kind of famous in a pop culture way. And she has her haters. One of them is a movie producer, Carol Baum. So Carol Baum, who teaches at USC, went viral for asking publicly, how can Sweeney be so popular if she's, quote, not pretty and can't act? Obviously, she is. So here is Sydney Sweeney's response. She included a photo of herself donning a pullover sweatshirt that had writing on it. And I'm just quoting here, folks, in the guise of an apology. Sorry, not sorry. Sorry for having great tits and correct opinions, it says on the sweatshirt. And then there's a close-up of the shirt so you can read all the words. I don't think there are many actresses, influencers, pop culture stars who would play up that phrase. She is well-known for being well-endowed, I will hasten to add. Not that I have any opinions on this, but it's kind of a good retort if you like that sort of thing. Hey, thanks for sticking with us. See you tomorrow with more BuzzMeter.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network, subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.